Steve Harvey was interviewed by, I can't remember the lady's name. She's in part of a panel of, I guess it's a commentary of The Chew or something like that. The View. And I can't, same difference. And she had a series of questions for him. She was interviewing him. And one of the questions was, what is his position on, well, there's not everybody is, she was trying to make it subtle, but not sure of God's existence. And Steve Harvey looked at her and he said, you mean an atheist? And she said, well, yeah, they've been called atheists. I have no business with them. I have nothing to say with them. And she stood back and she said, what? She says, well, you know, they're just not sure of what their position of God is and, you know, how they came to exist. He said, don't start with me on that. He said, first of all, his words, not mine, they're idiots. He said, how do you think, you know, they have no boundaries, that boundaries of right or discernment. He used the word discernment, of right and wrong. So how can they gauge what their views are about anything else? So I have no dealing with them. Well, suppose one comes to meet you and asks, how are you doing? Very well. I say, I'm not going to interfere in their life or anything, but I have no business with them. That's as far as I get. And next question. So, brethren, at one time, his belief system was challenged. You know, he could have gone mainstream Hollywood and he would have said, well, you know, come off with some sidebar answer, some passive answer to appease, you know, the general audience. But he answered straight and direct. At one time or another, our beliefs will be challenged, brother. Whatever they are. And whatever your position is, you could be asking for at work, you can be asking for the feast days. I know time and time again, my times, and I've shared some of my events with you, it looks like it's a revelation. Every year I ask for the feast days and they go through this big exercise and it's just part of it. It can be the Sabbath. It can be dietary laws. I had an aunt years and years ago when I first came into the church. I had to go to Mexico City to do some family business. And I was at her house and I told her what my dietary requirements are. You know, I said, I no longer attend the Catholic faith. And she was like, okay, fine. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Mexican cuisine, but there's a it's like mole, but it's green. And it's very delicious. It's made with a little of tomatillo, and gives it the green. It's very good. And she served it to me that night. And I ate. And she asked, and she looked at me and said, how is that pork? And I said, oh, okay. But I'm pretty sure everyone here has a story or two to tell, or about that or something similar. Many of us has had our value system challenged. Some of us has buckled. We got, yeah, you really want this job? Well, I need you to work a couple Saturdays. Or some of us stood our ground. I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'm not allowed to. My faith doesn't allow me to. Well, then you're not going to get it. Well, I will. And some of us handle it right. Or some of us handle it wrong. Not wrong, but pretty abrupt. I remember one of my daughters when the school said, come on, we're going to go into Halloween party here. And says, no, I'm not. And says, why? Because it's pagan. And some of us will say, you know, at my work, they've asked me, and I said, no, I'd rather not to attend. I'd rather not attend. But either way, the word no, some people just can't digest. If you tell them no, I'm not going with mainstream the big, like the scriptures say, the one with the wide gate, you're not going that way. I'm going to go this way. People, some people just can't handle that. People around us treat us differently because they know we have a value system. We're going to say no for whatever. We all know what it is. Values are at the core of an individual. It's what you are. It's who you are personally, not just mainstream. It's who you are. Values are relatively enduring conceptions of judgments about what we consider to be important. The place in which our values are challenged are mainly in our jobs. It can be a contract job too. Anybody remember the baker that refused the gay couple's request for a cake? And the book was thrown at him, I understand. I didn't keep up with it, but I mean, there was legal ramifications, but he stood his ground. He had a value system, and he stuck with it. And he paid the price, and I'm pretty sure everybody has battle scars. It is a good feeling, though, when our personal values and the values, it's the organization, but I should have rewarded it, or the people around you, share that kind of value system. I had a commander years ago who I was in a predicament several years ago. It was a political predicament, and it had to do with the feast days. And he backed me up. He backed me up all the way. Well, come to find out, after I've retired and he's retired, I find out he's a Jew. So it is important that the organization that we work for permanently or contractually have the same value system of us if we want to work at a good... And if not, that it doesn't interfere or challenge our value system. You know, they said, I don't care what you do. Well, you know, that's kind of way that, as long as they leave us, what we practice is fine. However, our value systems might go challenged. And here's an example. There's a job opportunity. I use that job opportunity because everybody's familiar with it. And it pays $30 an hour. And the person that's seeking, professional that's seeking a job for you, gives that to you and says, man, it's great, your qualifications meet it on point. And you're all excited, and he says, what am I going to be doing? Well, I'm going to be doing this and this and this. Oh, great. And it's going to be a medical facility. Or it is. He says, yeah, well, you come up, you find out it's an abortion clinic. What's your value system? The sermon today I'm going to talk about is, what are your core values? Core values are the fundamental beliefs of a person or organization. Their guiding principles dictate behavior and can help people understand the difference between right and wrong. We're going back to discernment. Let's go to the book of Daniel. I chose Daniel here for our little instruction here. There's Daniel 1. Daniel 1, and we're going to go to and third verse. Now, it's Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar is, just imagine, he is the king of kings. He is Mr. Ego. You know, he has everything. Verse 3. Then the king instructed Aspenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children that they've captured of Israel, children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, verse 4, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve the king's palace and whom they might teach the language of the Chaldeans. He wanted them for his inner court. He wanted young men. And I did some digging around, and I said, young men, what did he mean by young men? Well, after going through several instructors, I found some scholars, or read some scholars, that said 12 to 14 years old. And some say 15 to 16. But either case, they're young men. And it's teachable. But remember, every one of us that have had young men, or at those ages, they're kind of buck the system a little bit. Start bucking the system. Okay, let's go to Daniel 3. We've set the stage. We say, okay, we want these men, and I'm going to train them the way I want to. They're going to be my pets. And I'm going to mold them to serve me. That's what his thinking was. So he built this golden image. And I read why. And it's basically all the things, reasons why, is because of to fill his ego. Because he wanted to. Let's go to 16. Chapter 3, verse 16. And we'll go through to 28. I'm purposely reading all this so we can get the glimpse, the real crust of this thing. Okay. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which were their names, answered and said to the king, after he said, he asked why they didn't bow to this to his golden image. O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. In other words, they were straightforward. Did the Steve Harvey on them. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand. Basically, he was saying, if you don't bow down to this golden image, I'm going to throw in this furnace. So, well. Now, for us barbecue people, back in the day, before they had the, you know, I'm kind of lazy, they had the gauge there on what the temperature is, but would go in and check to see how hot the flames were, and you go one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. And after the third Mississippi, you take your hand out, and you know it's around 300 to 400 degrees. So it's put whatever you're going to put on. But just imagine that. Telling young men, you're going to be thrown, and you that big furnace there, I'm going to throw you in. You talk about a challenge to your value system. And for them to say no. You know, we read it and we talk about it. But until we are there. 18. But if not, be it known that unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which you hast set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Visage means his attitude. His attitude was, I'm going to get these pets, and I'm going to... And when they turn on him, his whole attitude towards them turned. So it turned into rage. Therefore he spoke and commanded that they should heat the furnace 7 times more. Now in the King James it says, won't to be heated. In other words, it was 7 times more than it was designed to be heated. Now, at work we had years ago, they heated the buildings at the Naval Station. All the Navy facilities were heated by steam heat. And it was a central boiler building. And the boiler, one boiler, was as long as this building, this room was. And it was huge. And it's what it did was provide steam to all the facilities. And there was an area there, it was a little viewing that you could, the boiler man can see the furnace and making sure that all the flames are burning blue. And it's a big, thick plate. Now, Nebuchadnezzar didn't have that. He saw it from, I think, what he's talking about, from a higher vantage point. And verse 20, and he commanded the most mighty men that were in the his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Do you want to know why he commanded the most mighty men? I looked up at it, and they found out that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't go voluntarily. So most of them had to be carried and thrown in there, and which you don't blame them. Verse 21, these men were bound to their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their garments. Everything was tied, and were cast in the midst of the fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flames of the fire slew those men that took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It burned those guys to a crisp before they even threw them in. And these men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. But then Nebuchadnezzar noticed them. The king was astonished and rose in haste and spoke and said to his counselors, did not we cast three men bound in the midst of the fire? And they answered, yes, we did. True, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking at the midst of the fire, and they have not hurt, and the form of a fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the fiery furnace and spoke and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I found that pretty astounding for if they burned up the man the people throwing in there for him to get that close for them to hear it. Ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth in the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, everybody was there, being gathered together, saw these men upon those bodies whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair on his head singed. Neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of the fire had passed on them. Now, this is what Nebuchadnezzar was wise. And I think this is the difference between him and even King Solomon. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, his ego could have taken him another. Well, if the fire won't do it, we'll chop their heads off or something. But no, he submitted. He has sent his angel to deliver his servants and trusted him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies and their might not serve nor worship any god except their own. These young men put it all on the line. They stood firm on what they believed. I want to take some time for us to absorb this. Here are three young men. They had it made. They had it made. Just like Moses was had it made. All they did was tend to the king's affairs. And I'm pretty sure the king had everything for him. Then a decree is sent out that from the most powerful king of that time. And it says, everyone at the sound of trump is to stop what they're doing and to bow down towards the direction of the golden image that the king had set up. Where did they get the decree from? His pride and arrogance and self-fulfillment of having control of hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people. Let's go to verse 7 of 3. Verse 7 of 3. Now take a load of this. It says, therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sack, and psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. Now, it says, all the people, the nations. So I did some study on this, and some scholars say, no, it wasn't really all the nations, all the peoples. It was just there at the king's court, and it was just officers. And I'm not going to dispute the word of God. It says all, and it says nations. Now, I did some more digging, and they were communicating from one town to another. They used to blow a shofar, or from, from one hill to another. So that's how, probably that's how they communicated to all the nations that were captured. And it did take some time. It wasn't, we're in a time of instant everything. There it probably took some time to do that. This was quite an event. Remember all the musical instruments that was involved with it. It was quite a task that must have taken a day or two. Verse 8. Same chapter. Wherefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. Now, in some translations, it says astrologers. And Nebuchadnezzar was into astrology and sorcery and all that stuff. So some astrologers ratted those guys out. Now, you know, we have the thinking, well, all the Jews. Now, these men were Jews, yes, but the rest of the Jews bowed down to the golden image. And verse 12, if you read down verse 12, they were not all the Jews bowed down, just except for three. They didn't do it. They did not bow down to the golden image, not because they were Jew, but because it was wrong. It was against their core values. It was against their personal core values as a person. Let's take this scenario in a more modern setting. Let's say the White House. The White House states there will be a solar eclipse on this certain date, and all need to face towards the eclipse and fall on their knees and bow down. And because the government likes astrology, so everybody has to do so. And by some way, the government would find out who did and who did not. Oh, and if you did bow down, and if you made the extra effort going to Illinois, you got a huge tax refund. And for those who didn't, there's big, large consequences. Now, would you go? Would you do it? This is against your core values. Now, I've come up with four core values as an example. Okay? Core value number one, and it's pretty simple. Glorify God. That's basic and simple. It's too simple for other people that don't understand. It's too simple for them. They need something complicated. The Bible teaches how it is for Christians to glorify God by loving God with all of our being. That's the first commandment, Deuteronomy 5:6. Now, let's go to Mark. I have to put in a chip for Mark. Mark 12, chapter 12. Verse 29. And Jesus went ahead and told the people at that time, he hammered that in still even more. Mark 12 and verse 29. And it says, and Jesus answered him, the first of the commandments is, hear. Now get a load of this, brethren. Hear, O Israel. He didn't say, hear, O all people. He said, hear, O Israel. The Lord our God is one Lord. And go to verse 30. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. Now, on your bulletins, it's Matthew 15:22 is quoted there. He, in that Matthew 22, on that bulletin, it states, it mentions Israel. When Jesus is trying, this Canaanite woman is asking Jesus to take help her daughter. And Jesus said, I'm not here for you guys. I'm here for the lost sheep of Israel. And that's when she put herself as even the dogs eat the crumbs of the master's table. So there's a connection, there's a personal connection between what God is saying to us. Because people that haven't been called or aren't even following him, not let's just say not called, but let's following or attempting to follow his ways, he's talking to us. Core two, integrity. That's a basic requirement for us as Christians. Integrity. I can depend on that person. If he said 7 o'clock, he's coming at 7 o'clock. Or if she said she's not going to do it, or she's going to help me, she's going to help me. Because that's who he or she is. That is high in the ranking of Christians' core value is integrity. This is seen as an assertion to avoid anything that would discredit the work of a Christian or even appear to be dishonorable. Because people have a tendency to grab whoever you represent and put you in a pigeon box or in a bucket. All Christians are that way. You know, she says she's a Christian, but she didn't help me. All Christians are that way. So that's what that means. The Bible teaching about core values in being a Christian is crystal clear regarding honesty, transparency, and truthfulness. These are basic stuff, brethren, but it's not bad to go through. Core three, service before self. I'm going to go back to my namesake, Mark 10. Mark chapter 10 and verse 45. I'm going to drive home there. Mark 10, verse 45. And it says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, like Nebuchadnezzar wanted everybody to do, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. To follow that there is a message for us too. Turn with me to Philippians, brother. Let's go to Philippians. I'm going to Paul hammer it even more. I'm going to hammer this thing. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 to 4. It reads, let nothing be done through selfish ambition. I'm going to do this because I'm going to get something out of it. Or conceit. But in lowliness of mind. In other words, humility, brethren. Let each esteem others better than himself. You can do it. I know you can. But you can do it. No, but I believe in you. Come on, you can do it. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also the interests of others. Now, let me interject something, brethren. I don't mean to sound selfish or ego, but givers are good givers. That takes care of other people's interests, whoever it might be. But givers sometimes forget themselves. And you've heard that. That person sometimes forget themselves. And I'm here to tell you, don't forget yourself too in this. God doesn't want us to forget ourselves. Take care of ourselves, brethren. If we're taking care of someone or in charge of something, don't forget to take care of ourselves. Going back. In our society, this is more times than none hard to do. People aren't used to taking care of other people because of the individualized nature of this culture. It is the first me mentality. And if you don't believe me, have you ever been to a sale? Or they're giving away something. You know, bread. Remember? Giving away bread? Oh. The Bible teaching about core values in Christian places, others first. We don't have to wait, or do we have to wait for a hurricane to happen to show that we're working together, brother? Does it need to go to that extent? We should be doing it all the time. Core value 4. And this is true. Loyalty. God needs our loyalty, brethren. To take a different path on this core value, all I can come up with is an example of somebody that came was disloyal, and you've heard me mention Judas Iscariot. His loyalty was 30 pieces of silver. That's how much Jesus Christ, the Savior of this world, meant to him. And some say, well, he was jealous because he didn't start a rebellion, or it doesn't matter. He sold out his friend for 30 pieces of silver. And to stay, all his apostles bailed out on Jesus. All of them. They ran, including my namesake. Except for John. If you read the scriptures, John was always there. He was there when Jesus was being questioned, and he was there when he was taking his cross with Mary, and he was there at the crucifixion. So John, the quiet one, was the one that I feel that was most loyal to Jesus. And I think that's why Jesus told John to take care of his mom. How about you, brethren? What are your core values? Do me a favor. Try something different. Write out five things that are core values for each one of you. Just write it out. It can be a one-liner. You know, health or God first. And out of those, make it the three values at the top of your list. Three values that you will not budge for. And I'll give you maybe 35 seconds. Now, later on, you can compare it with your partner's values. Are they the same? Do you see things the same way? Remember, this does not have to be exact science. Reflect on your values and the way you live your day-to-day lives. Because they're going to be challenged, brother. How you spend your time. How well does your life reflect your core values? Values are at the core of an individual's identity. Brethren, fear God and keep his commandments, for that is the whole duty of man.